Football in Europe is sponsored by BetOnBrazil.com. It's the betting site for all sports punters with great odds, markets and offers.
Listeners to this podcast can now get up to £60 deposit match when you use the promo code FIE60. Just visit BetOnBrazil.com and enter promo code FIE60 when you deposit and we'll match your deposit up to £60. Also look out for our daily happy hour offers between 5pm and 6pm.
Sign up now at BetOnBrazil.com. BetOnBrazil.com is for over 18s only. Betting should be fun, so please gamble responsibly.
You're listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe. I'm Rob Daly. With me for this European football podcast is Chris Parrott. Chris, what are we talking about this week?
Well, there's another trophy, Rob, for Real Madrid. The FIFA Club World Cup has taken place. We only ever talk about it at this time of the year because it's irrelevant for the other 12 months. We're also going to keep you updated with the big stories in Spain and Germany and Italy and France as well. We've got Adam Summerton, who commentated on one of the big games there in Liga, where Nice will definitely be top come the winter break, which is a remarkable achievement.
Okay, Chris, so we normally start the show with Rubens and we'll be getting to your highlight of the weekend as well. Thank you to everyone who tweets in at FIE Podcast. Chris, what's your Ruben this week? Your lovely bit of trivia or a statistic of some kind?
Well, I thought that as we're getting to the midway point of seasons across the continent, that I'd have a look at the top average attendances. So I've got the
You
top...
love attendances, don't you?
Massive fan of attendances. I don't know why. but yeah, as I was doing it, I thought, I hope he doesn't pick me up, but you have, so congratulations.
Go on.
Here we go. I'll ask you a question. There are two clubs, only two clubs in Europe, who this season have averaged more than 80,000 every home game. Who are they?
Barcelona?
Correct.
Dortmund?
Yes, two out of two. There are only a further two who average more than 70,000. So the top four clubs in Europe are a fair way ahead, if you like. So who, given you got those two, right, who do you think are three and four? And they basically get exactly the same amount of people in every week, home games.
Oh, okay, 70,000. Are Real Madrid one?
No, they're not.
Oh.
And actually, Real Madrid's average, I say only, 68,000 this season, which is 13,000 less than Barcelona.
Okay. Manchester United, is that more than 70 yet?
Manchester United is correct. 75,000, which is basically the same as the other member of the top four.
Oh, this is really tough. Bayern, the Allianz doesn't have that many, does it?
It does. You've done it. Four out of four. It does for Bundesliga games in particular, because I think they have the standings, so it's a bit more. So two from the Bundesliga, one from Spain, and one from England. And beyond that, and this is, I think, all the clubs that average more than 60,000 a week. You've got Real Madrid, as I've mentioned, 68,000. And then Arsenal and Schalke, who both, their average attendances are about 60,000.
Okay, very good, Chris.
And would you like to, I'll go on because I researched this. Italy. Italy's nowhere near. The top in Italy is Inter, 44,000, and Milan, 42,000. And poor old France, Paris Saint-Germain average almost 45,000 a week, and Lyon are second best in Ligue 1 with 41,000.
Oh, good work, Chris. You've covered all bases there.
Unfortunately, I can't now do another attendance until about at least March.
Yeah, no more attendance ones. Okay, thank you for your tweets, by the way, this week, and for your iTunes reviews. Big Griffer says, essential listening, get it downloaded. Thanks, Big Griffer.
Yeah.
Why do the people who leave the iTunes reviews always have weird names?
Is it because it's you and me and you?
Someone was called Peanut Spurs. I remember another guy was called something like Evil Monkey.
Do you think they're the people that have still got those really weird email addresses?
Probably.
XXX Trashy Fairy at Hotmail.com.
Yeah. Gary 69. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you can't, if you're applying for a job, mate, you're going to have to change that now. It was funny when you're 14. I still find it funny now, but apparently other people don't.
Here's my Ruben. Bayern have had at least one player in the World Cup final every year since 1982.
Have they?
Yeah, what a club.
Yeah, that is, you know you're a big club when that happens.
Yeah, so some of these are for Germany. Germany West Germany had a team in the World Cup final every year, 82, 86, 90. So that's explained.
Yeah, that does help. That does help, yeah.
94, Jorginho for Brazil. 98, Lizarazu for France. Then there was Kahn and Linker among those for Germany in 2002. Willy Sanyol for France in 2006. Robben and Van Bommel for the Netherlands in 2010. And then Neuer, Boateng, Lahm, Schweinsteiger, Kroos, Müller and Mario Götze, I think, at the time as well. So that's my Ruben for the week, showing the strength of Bayern. Yeah,
I like that.
Always send in your Rubens as well. It's
Did you steal that?
It's from somewhere. I've read it.
I've read it. That's good. I like that. It's good.
Okay, Chris. So the FIFA Club World Cup final was at the weekend, and Real Madrid are world champions, a term we don't really use with clubs, really, but for the second time in 3 years, how did they do that?
Well, it was a bit of a struggle. It was actually a good game. I think normally this competition it sort of passes me by. I don't know about you. You don't necessarily consider it really as though you're world champions. I know they technically are. And it's wonderful for the marketing men as well. They beat Kashima Antlers 4-2 after extra time. And guess who scored a hat-trick?
Ronnie,
CR7. First ever player to score three times in a Club World Cup final. It was an open game. And actually, I think Kashima Antlers made history because they were the first Asian side to reach the final. It is normally South America against Europe, but it wasn't on this occasion. So fair play to Real Madrid. And they didn't... Yeah, I mean, it's because it comes at a slightly odd time of the year, certainly for English sides, doesn't it? But not as much for Spanish teams when you're heading into a winter break. They can go there and enjoy themselves and come back and say they're the best team in the world.
Yeah, it seems to mean a lot to the Spanish clubs in particular. I mean, obviously, Barcelona have won it in recent times, and now Real Madrid with their successes as well. Ronaldo said, the 31-year-old described 2016 as his dream year. He says, we've suffered a lot, but to win you have to suffer, and we ended the year in the best way. And he said after the game, after there had been a bit of criticism about him not scoring in big games, although that seems very harsh after showing against Atletico earlier in the season. He says, you always expect more from Cristiano. He's gone for the third person. But when I do not give more, it's because I cannot.
It's interesting as well, James Rodriguez, unused sub. And he said, I can't assure I'll stay at Real Madrid. It's sort of been rumbling on this for quite a while. I mean, there'll be plenty of suitors. I don't think he'll come cheap, that's for sure, if he leaves. And you wonder whether maybe, you know, he's always linked with Premier League clubs. But in terms of the amount of money he'll have to spend, it might just be a Premier League side could be the only one who would be able to afford him. So we'll keep an eye on that. He says he's happy at Real Madrid, but in fairness to him, he's good enough to get in most starting 11s, isn't he? And he's not an automatic starter for Zidane.
Where do you think he should end up next?
I'd love to see him in the Premier League. I mean, it cost $71 million in 2014, which is, you know, it might be part of the problem for him, because it's going to take a monumental fee, you would imagine, for Real Madrid to accept it, whilst he is still playing some part. And if football's a squad game, particularly when you're Real Madrid fighting on however many fronts, so that might curtail a move in January. It'd be interesting. I mean, there'll be plenty of teams interested. You also wonder whether, I talked about the money in the Premier League, maybe China, which would be a shame, given, you know, how good he can be. But you just wonder, because of that fee that they spent when they got him from Monaco, will that, you know, does that mean that only a handful of clubs can possibly afford him?
Yeah, I mean, he has been linked with China in recent days. 858 minutes he's played this season. Nowhere near enough for a player of his quality.
And some people seem to have you put him in the same bracket as Isco. You know, those two players who aren't in the 11, but actually,
yeah,
Isco,
absolutely.
Actually, Isco has played a lot more than James Rodriguez has. So, I can totally understand why he wants to leave Real Madrid, and it'd be terrific to see him in the Premier League, because he's a heck of a talent.
Okay. In Spain at the weekend, with Real Madrid away on a FIFA Club World Cup duty, Barcelona closed the gap at the top with a win in the Catalan derby. I saw this one, Chris. Very good game, actually.
Yeah.
Very good game. And Espanyol were actually particularly impressive in first half, I thought. Quique Sanchez Flores, former Atletico manager and former Watford manager, of course, in charge at Espanyol these days. They seem to be containing Barcelona very well. I don't know if you saw any of the goals, but the first goal was this pass from Iniesta from inside his own half, clipped round the back of the entire Espanyol back line, and Suarez raced through and slotted in a brilliant goal. Suarez ending up with two, his second one coming after maybe the best dribble I've seen this season from Messi, a little combination with Iniesta, and he went past four players. It's so funny how he got past him. He nutmegged a couple of them. He nearly scored, his shot was saved, and Suarez putting in the rebound, and Messi did score in the game in the end in a 4-1 win in the derby. But I was watching Luis Suarez, and Chris, I can't get over what a good player he is.
I know, absolutely. You feel that when he was at Ajax and when he was at Liverpool, everybody knew he was good. And then, you know, the two incidences and maybe the when he got the ban here for the racism, that I don't know if that took away quite what a brilliant player he was in people's minds, certainly not on the pitch. But now you look back and you think he was at those clubs for a long time, really, wasn't he? Like, Liverpool did very well to have Luis Suarez for the time at that stage of his career, I think, given he's gone to Barcelona and he's the best finisher and number nine in the world. I think
he's the forward that Barcelona have had that have got more out of Messi than any other.
Definitely.
I think even more out of than Villa, more than Neymar, more than the early days of Messi when he was playing with the likes of Eto. I think Suarez has been the best foil for Messi that we've ever seen, club or country.
And it
also got me thinking, Chris, about who is the best number nine in the world. I mean, it's a chat you could have forever. And I'm talking about proper strikers here. And I had a short list, and I had Griezmann, Lewandowski, Higuain, Aguero, Benzema. I think Suarez, I'd probably take Suarez over all of them.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's sometimes it's hard to say because, you know, great players, when they play with other great players, can look even better. And you wonder if you put him into another team, would he? But then again, at Liverpool, he did it, and he made them significantly better, I think, and made, you know, Sturridge and Sterling perhaps their most consistent best, although Raheem Sterling is playing well, was alongside Suarez. So he's done it consistently. Yeah, I'd agree. I think he's the best number nine in the world. I think he's absolutely frightening. And that new deal...
Tell us about his new contract, Chris. He signed that last Friday.
Yeah, he did new deal till 2021, which basically takes him to, one would imagine, I think, into his 30s, which probably would be his last major, you know, if he sees that through. There's every chance he might sign another deal, but it sort of means that he's going to be at Barcelona. His buyout is 167.5 million, which really got me chuckling again. I think of this at least once a week, Arsenal bidding that 40 million and a pound.
That's so you're going to bid 167,500,000 and £1.
But he is, I mean, 99 goals in 117 games since going to Barca. That's bonkers. He's outscored, I don't think he did in 2016, but he regularly now outscores Messi and Neymar. It's partly due to the role that he plays in that front three. But, I mean, what a signing. You have to credit, because if you're Barcelona and you know, if you're buying someone for money, they really have to come in and make your team better, which is very hard. And they absolutely picked the right striker, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, Madrid spent the same money on James and Barcelona went for Suarez. 48 assists as well for Suarez since he joined in 2014. Okay, tell us who you think is the best number nine in the world. I think it's something we could probably discuss to the end of the season. Yeah. Maybe you'd have Aubameyang in that category of top strikers as well. But Griezmann, Lewandowski, Benzema, Higuain, Aguero, are we missing anyone at FIE podcast?
I'm gonna put one out. I think people may suggest, but I would disagree, is I think Cavani's, and particularly this season as it goes on, he'll probably hit 30 goals, but I don't think he is in that bracket.
No, I don't either. I was chatting it out with someone earlier and that name came up. Ibrahimovic even came up as well. I mean, we think back to what he did last season, but they're probably just on the edge of that category.
Misses too many chances. And
absolutely.
That Arsenal game against Paris Saint-Germain at the Emirates was the case in point. they should have won the game. Cavani missed at least two very good chances, which Suarez, Griezmann, Lewandowski, Benzema, Higuain or Aguero, I think, would have taken.
Okay, other headlines from La Liga. Actually, let's read out some of your highlights of the week because we've had lots in on Barcelona. Daniela V. Moroni says the second half of Messi against Espanyol was incredible. Gav says Messi and Iniesta's masterclass. Yes, masterclass. Well worth looking up the highlights. I think La Liga put the highlights out for free on YouTube. So yeah. If you haven't seen the goals, and in particular the second for Suarez, get on YouTube as well. Okay, other headlines from La Liga before we hear from Adam Summerton. Atletico beat Las Palmas 1-0, only 1-0 at home. Saul with the goal there. Sevilla stay third after beating Malaga. Vieta got a brace in that 4-1 win. Luciano Vieta on loan from Atletico. And Villarreal in fourth looking good too. They got a 3-1 win at Sporting after they beat Atletico, of course, last Monday. Okay, we're going to be talking about the Bundesliga and Eredivisie shortly. But next up, it's Serie A and Liga with Adam Summerton.
This is Football in Europe, Serie A Roundup.
Joining us now on Football in Europe is BT Sport commentator Adam Summerton. Adam, thanks for returning to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Rob. Good to speak to you.
Yeah, great to hear from you, Ad. Let's start with Serie A first, and we'll get on to a bit of French football that you covered this weekend as well. But I suppose Juventus against Roma was the big game of the weekend. Juve 1-0 winners, Higuain with the only goal of it. And I suppose in big games like that, that's exactly the kind of match you pay all that money for Higuain for.
Absolutely, and it was just a typical Higuain goal, really. There's few centre-forwards, really, in the modern game that score goals like that. I always think he's a bit of a raging bull of a centre-forward is probably the way I'd describe him. I mean, I just think that he's fitted in so well at Juventus because he has the same mentality that they have there, and I think that you have to have that, or you have to develop it and learn it very quickly at Juventus, otherwise it won't work for you there. And he's fitted in very well indeed, and you know, he's a scorer of big goals too. You know, come the latter stages of the Champions League, I guess you could say, when we'll fully learn just how good a signing he proves to be for Juventus, because that is the holy grail for them. But that was a significant victory in the title race. It means the 7 points clear. They've beaten one of their greatest challenges. You could argue Roma and Napoli are probably their biggest threats, but that's 14 wins and 3 defeats so far this season for Juve. They're the only European side to top their Champions League group and simultaneously top their domestic league. And I just feel that there's still more to come from them this season as well. I feel they're holding a little bit back. You could even say that about Higuain personally and a few other players as well. But this home record they've got in the league, Rob, is phenomenal. Unbeaten in 27 home league matches, and they've won the last 25. I mean, these are ridiculous numbers that they've been racking up for some time now.
On Higuain, I mean, it was a goal I thought Szczesny actually could have potentially saved. I was a bit confused as to how Higuain sort of snuck it in at the near post past him.
Yeah, I thought Szczesny pulled off a couple of good saves in the game as well, but maybe I just think that Higuain, when he gets into that sort of mood that he so often was at Napoli, and has shown glimpses of it as well at Juventus, he's just so hard to stop. I mean, he's a devastating centre forward. You could argue as an out and out centre forward, I don't believe there's a better player in the modern game right now. I mean, I know people will throw the names of Messi and Ronaldo clearly in there and Suarez, but I wouldn't describe them as out and out centre forwards. I'm sure people know what I mean by that, the sort of thing I'm getting at. And I think that he's just the best in the business right now. Yes, they probably, you could say they overpaid for a player of his age in terms of, what would the potential sell on? Would they ever make that money back? Probably not. But they weakened a direct rival. They weakened both of their direct rivals, didn't they? The sides you just mentioned there, Napoli and Roma, by signing Higuain and Pjanic. And both of them are playing very well right now.
Speaking of Pjanic, I see he's a doubt for the Supercoppa Italiana on Friday. Can you explain why the Italian Super Cup is played in December, and it's played in Doha as well, which seems very strange.
Yeah, I think this is all really about marketing the league, really, isn't it? Marketing Italian football, taking it to somewhere like Doha, where they could get a much bigger crowd if it was played in Italy. So I think it has got its opponents. It raises eyebrows. I'm not quite so sure about it, really. I'm not sure there's a great deal of wisdom in taking, the players all that far away from home. But, the league has to sell itself. We see the Premier League has been the most successful league in the world at doing that. And so, you know, other leagues have to find little ways of competing and looking for shares of the limelight as well. So I can understand why they do it. I expect both sides will take the game very seriously, and it should be a good contest. You know, it was only a very narrow defeat for Milan in the Coppa Italia final at the end of last season. So they'll feel, I would say that they're ahead of schedule as well. I know they've had a difficult week. They got beat by Roma, drew with Atalanta. But I think if you look at the first half of the season as a whole, for Montella and Milan, I would argue that they're ahead of schedule, and there's been some really big positives for them so far this season. And if they could beat Juventus in the Supercoppa, that would give them a really big lift.
New contract for Bonucci at Juventus as well, Adam. Why have they been so keen, do you think, to tie him down for more years?
Well, I can only say in my own personal opinion, I think he's the best centre-half in the world right now. I know that, you know, other people will throw in other names like Godin, for example, Hummels, people might point to as well. There are several that you could mention, but I think that he's the best for me right now. And he embodies everything about that mentality that's so important for Juventus, why they continue to win those tight games. You know, it's no coincidence that they always seem to find a way. It's a footballing cliche, but if ever anything summed up Juventus, that's what they do season in, season out with this side. And of course, he's part of a back three. I know they played a four at the weekend, didn't they, without Bonucci, who's injured right now. But we've become so used to seeing that three with Barzagli and Chiellini. And I think that, you know, when we look back in 10, 15, 20, 30 years' time even, people will look back at that three and they'll say that was one of the greatest ever defences I think that we've ever seen. You know, you look what they're achieving in Italian football, how close they came to winning the Champions League as well a couple of years ago. Should have gone a lot further in last season's competition as well. I just think he's an absolutely wonderful footballer. And even though he started out at Inter, I think that he sort of bleeds black and white these days.
Yes, I mean, but I remember Buffon saying it's the best defence he's ever played with. And bear in mind, obviously, that he played with the likes of Maldini for the national team. Let's turn our attention quickly, Adam, to Napoli and how they are coping with the Milik injury situation, because they seem to have found a solution and a major goal-scoring threat in the Belgian international, Dries Mertens, because he was on fire, destroying Joe Hart at the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, what a performance. Four goals from Dries Mertens. That's eight goals in three games, back-to-back hat-tricks, four against Torino, three against Cagliari, and got one in the Champions League as well against Benfica. But I did have to laugh when I saw a quote from Sarri, who's so demanding of his players after the game. He said, yeah, he's been good, but he needs to be more consistent, which I thought was great. It just kind of summed up Sarri for me. But, you know, it's brilliant for Mertens right now. I mean, even today, Maradona's been pictured holding up a Mertens shirt, which clearly you know, it's massive for any Napoli player to have that happen. Do you know, he's the first Napoli player to score four goals in a game since Beppe Savoldi in December of 1977. Wow. You know, so that's how long it's been. But you know what? They've tried so many different things this season, clearly Napoli, because there was a huge gap left by Higuain, and they could never replace him. But Milik came in and really hit the ground running, did ever so well, and picked up that serious injury, and it left them incredibly short. You have to maybe ask one or two questions about the planning there, because there was no natural backup to Milik once he got that injury. They couldn't play in the same way. They had to change the style again. So that explains why maybe Napoli's first half of the season hasn't been quite what they would have hoped, but still I think they've done very well when you consider, you know, that injury to Milik as well. But they've had to tinker with things. They've tried Gabbiadini in the central area. He's just not centre forward. That hasn't really worked. We saw one or two decent performances from him, but they've struggled there. They've just tried different combinations, and now, you know, they seem to have stumbled on this with Mertens, who, you know, last season, Rob, he only started six league games. You know, people forget that. Really? This was a guy. Yeah, and he started, it was 27 times he came on as a sub. So, you know, this is a guy who under Sarri last season was really sort of having to make the most of limited opportunities that he got from the bench, and he would be played out wide, which is the position you would ordinarily expect to see him play. But, you know, almost fallen into this by accident, if you like, they just need to try something else. And he's played through the middle and he's done exceptionally well in this false nine role. I still don't think it's anything like a solution in the long term, but it's a good fix right now while they wait for Milik to get fit in probably late January, early February. And there's also been talk as well that they're potentially looking at bringing in Genoa's Leonardo Pavoletti as well. So, you know, they could end up with going from having very little up front to an embarrassment of riches come the new year. But, you know, I think to top their Champions League group was a big achievement when you consider that they, as I mentioned, were without Milik and have had, you know, their troubles so far this season as well. So I think they've done really well with that. And they're in touch in terms of, you know, the finishing in the top three in the in Serie A, you know, they're third right now, and they've got a great chance of doing that. So I think that when on reflection, Sarri will probably be pretty pleased with the first half of the season.
Adam, I want to ask you on Liga in a moment, but first, can I ask you about Balotelli? Ventura saying that he could get a call up to the latest score. Scored a couple of goals at the weekend, Balotelli, which me and Chris will talk about later on in the show. But can you give us an idea of the landscape in terms of strikers and where we are with Italy and who Balotelli will be coming up against to try and get a place in that squad?
Well, I think for me, the absolute number one now for Italy going forward will be Belotti, because he's an exceptional centre forward who's grown so much as a player in the last 6 to 12 months. He always had potential, but I think he's realising that potential now. He's really maturing superbly under the guidance of Mihailovic at club level and now Ventura at international level. So I think that he is going to be the number one first pick. Immobile has done pretty well so far this season for Lazio, a club that he moved to in the summer, seems to have, you know, rediscovered the scoring touch somewhat that it had previously eluded him in Spain and Germany. So, you know, I think he's probably, if they play two forwards, then it would be those two for me. And if they play one, it would be Belotti. And, you know, Balotelli's in the queue. You know, Pella has disappeared, or will, I think, disappear from the scene, had a bit of a falling out with Ventura and has moved to China. So that makes life difficult for him. But Balotelli, Ventura has said, look, I'll speak to him. Absolutely, I'll speak to him. And he's got the potential to get back into the squad. And, you know, when a player has scored 10 goals in all competitions, as he has done, he's missed a month as well through injury just recently, and he's still got 10 goals, and he's in a Nice side that are doing exceptionally well in Ligue 1 and are top of the league. So when he's in such a successful side and he's scoring goals, there's not really much more Balotelli can do to try and force Ventura's hand to bring him back in. I think it's inevitable, Rob, that he will get back in. It's just when. But I think the thing, just reading between the lines with Ventura, some of the quotes that have come out just recently about Balotelli, he's talking about, you know, how he needs to fit in with the team framework and, you know, these old issues about discipline and such. And I think that's probably what he means when he says he wants to speak to him, because I think he wants to see, you know, is this a Balotelli who can fit into what I'm trying to do? He's all about the team, Ventura, and he won't want somebody to come into that who he thinks could potentially spoil that harmony, that rhythm that they're looking to build up. So, you know, that's key, I think, for Balotelli and his reintroduction to the Italian national side.
It certainly is, and he's involved in a very exciting title race in France with Nice top, because you commentated on BT on the game at the Stade Louis II between Monaco and Lyon, and perhaps that game didn't go as many would have expected.
No, it didn't. It was a surprise, although if you look at the history of the fixture, it is Lyon who've had much the better of it. So in that respect, it wasn't that much of a surprise. They'd beaten them, Monaco, 6-1 at the end of last season back in May, and it ultimately really cost Monaco an automatic Champions League spot. And there was all that talk before the game about Monaco being out for revenge. But Lyon played very well, Rob. It was a really good away day, professional performance. They were one up before Mendy had a complete heads gone moment. I really cannot for the life of me work out what he was thinking. He had an off the ball incident with Tolisso, and he's just kicked him like you'd kick a football if you were trying to launch it up the pitch. I mean, it was just a stupid thing to do, and yeah, it was a clear red card.
Jonathan Stephen tweeted in to say, when the best Liga match of the season couldn't get any better, Mendy kicked someone up the arse.
Yeah.
So he certainly seemed to enjoy it. And a lot of the tweets we've had in, Adam, are about this one from Dom. PSG and Monaco losing was his highlight of the weekend, and Nice winning, leaving them 4 points clear at the moment. He says, is this the most exciting title race in Europe this year?
Well, it's got to be up there, hasn't it? Absolutely, it has. And, you know, people will ask the question, like they did with Leicester in the Premier League, is to, you know, can they really keep this going, Nice? Will they eventually fall away? And you're almost waiting for it to happen, aren't you? But it hasn't yet. And Lucien Favre, who we already knew was a wonderful coach, he's setting standards at Nice that, I mean, surely even he would have been surprised, you know, to look into a crystal ball at the start of the season and see that his side would be 4 points clear going into the final round before Christmas. I mean, it's quite remarkable, really. It's a fantastic story. But I guess we have to, you know, in light of everything I've just said, we still have to keep a little bit of perspective. I mean, I remember this time last year, Rob, Caen and Angers were challenging for the Champions League places. So, you know,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, they can slip away. Gangon or another side who are having a really good season as well up there challenging for the Europa League places. So you've got to exercise a little bit of caution, but there's nothing in the performances of Nice that say to me, this is a side that is going to fall away. I think Dante's doing a great job, by the way, as one of the elder statesmen of the side. They've just got a really good mix. I really like Seri in midfield. I think that he's so creative as well and can also do some defensive duties too. So there's player score a lot of goals as well. I worry about player though, because I think that he scored his goals while Balotelli's not been there. So yeah. Whether he'll be able to do it at the same time as Balotelli, I'm not quite sure. But they're a really exciting side. And I'd have to say that it probably is the most exciting title race in Europe right now, yeah?
Adam, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Merry Christmas. And Happy New Year,
to you,
mate.
Too. Yeah, have a good one, everyone.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
Big thanks to Adam Summerton, as always. Chris, it was good to catch up with Adam earlier. Let's just highlight the situation in Liga. We're talking about what a great title race it is in France at the moment. And I suppose it's partly down to not just the success of teams like Nice and Monaco, barring their weekend result, but also the failings of Paris Saint-Germain by the high standards they've set since the big takeover.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the last few years, they've won it by a frankly embarrassing amount of points, which has been bad for French football. And you know, all the papers have said that, including L'Equipe. You know, they're... It must be interesting if you're writing for L'Equipe, because you're enjoying, I think, the fact you've got a title race, but also you're sort of having a go at Paris Saint-Germain for that. And you know, you never know, Paris Saint-Germain could easily go on a run after the winter break and still win the title comfortably. But they were beaten at Gangon at the weekend, 2-1. They were two down after 70 minutes. Cavani scored to make it 2-1, 23 in his last 22 games, but it wasn't enough. It's one win in their last five games. Of course, they didn't top their group ahead of Arsenal either. So reports there's going to be a summit meeting in Qatar with the owners and the director of football, Patrick Kluivert. Emery's future will be discussed there, as well as the January transfer window. So you just wonder whether they might cut and run. I mean, it seems amazingly early for a man who did such a great job at Sevilla, but you look at the names who are out there. Kluivert is closely linked with Louis van Gaal, Gus Hiddink, Capello, Mancini. That's who was in L'Equipe. And you do wonder whether they might just decide, you know what, it hasn't been a great season, but we're still in the title race. Do we decide to go a different direction? And does Emery get the boot? You know, Paris Saint-Germain have barely lost a game in France in the last 2-3 years, and they certainly have this season so far.
Yeah, I saw David Ginola, obviously a former PSG player himself, saying that the club should stick with Emery. Do you think that they regret the decision to cut Laurent Blanc loose at the end of last season, despite the fact he won, I think it was 4 domestic trophies if we include the French Super Cup? Do you think they'll regret it?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the accusation was that, you know, they brought someone in to take them to the next level in Europe. Quarterfinals last season of the Champions League, that was the stated aim, to win that competition when the new investment, because they've always had investment, came in. And I'm sure Laurent Blanc would argue that I think he won the quadruple in both seasons he was there, and then got the boot. And, you know, he had a lot of injuries in that second leg against Manchester City. It's not just Unai Emery now who's going to be judged. It will be Patrick Kluivert who's going to be judged in his role. So, you know, does an element of selfishness come in? You know, it's the results of the team don't just look bad on one man, the coach. They look bad on a few others. I mean, saw L'Equipe, you know, famously tough. We've spoken about it on their player ratings. But Angel Di Maria, just, he got a 2 at the weekend away at Gangon. He doesn't look especially happy. You know, we'll get onto it in a moment. But Julian Draxler, I talked about that meeting about Emery and also about the January window.
Yeah, he's been linked, hasn't he?
Heavily. You know, if you believe the accounts, he's spoken to Kevin Trapp, his German teammate, and he said he wants to go. Do Paris Saint-Germain need him? Do they want him? I think they want him. They've reportedly, I think, 30 million euros is the bid to Wolfsburg, who have basically said, yeah, you're fine, you can leave. Do they need him? I read an article with Patrick Kluivert a couple of weeks ago where he was basically saying a centre forward is our main target, if you like.
Oh, really?
They seem to have an abundance of attacking midfielders. So, you know, whether they get Draxler. It's a, I don't know, it's so hard, isn't it, as you said, when the standards are so high, if they drop off even slightly, and they've dropped off more than that at Paris Saint-Germain this season, you can understand why they might decide to go about a change. I would stick, because he's only been there a couple of months, but the nature of football and the nature of Paris Saint-Germain might mean that it's a different outcome.
So overall, Chris, I mean, incredible first season in charge for Lucien Favre at Nice. And going into the winter break, they're in a fabulous position.
Yeah, they'll definitely be top, although there's one more game this midweek. And given they last won the title, Rob, in 1959, quite the story going on in the south coast of France. If they won it, I mean, that would be one of the stories in recent years.
Yeah, it certainly would. Okay, let's talk about Germany, Chris.
Yes, absolutely, including another managerial sacking. I think this is the sixth in the Bundesliga, and Andre Schubert could well become the seventh pretty quickly. At Augsburg, and given that they beat Gladbach, there appears to be more to this story than just results. Dirk Schuster gone.
Yes, yeah, it's a strange one. So the club insisted that they sacked Dirk Schuster, who took over in the summer, having kept Darmstadt up. And they said it was for sporting reasons. And they played down, there was this talk that Schuster had been involved with a fight at someone at the training ground because he turned up with a black eye. So the German media was saying, okay, what's happened here?
Where's that
sporting
from?
The sporting director, Stefan Reuter, says he had heard nothing about a fight. He said that Schuster had told him he had fallen and he had no reason not to believe him. It could happen to anyone. And then Schuster's agent, Ronnie Zeller, went into a bit more detail and said he slipped in his bathroom on Saturday evening, hit a rack with his head and sustained a cut just above his eye.
Did he?
And the club doctor took... I mean, I think Dirk Schuster's football's not pretty. Darmstadt were very long ball-y, very direct last season. And Augsburg, you know, they achieved more points than they did at this stage last season. But remember, they were in the Europa League trying to compete on all those fronts as well. But they only won three of their opening 14 games prior to his sacking, 13th in the table.
Augsburg are 12th. They've got 17 points. They're five ahead of Ingolstadt, who are third bottom. What do Augsburg want?
I don't know. Well, I suppose it's just preserving their Bundesliga status.
Yeah, but if you look at the points tally anyway, you would think that they're going to do that under Schuster. I don't want to be one of those.
I think this is why people are suspicious, Chris. I think people go, that doesn't really...
Be careful what you wish for. But if there's been a fight on the training ground, then as you infer, it's very different. You then sort of have to take some sort of action.
Yeah, I think they had... I don't know if they had actually got on that well. Dirk Schuster is certainly a very strong-minded manager. But I'm not quite sure on... I'm sure it will eventually come out and we'll hear from Dirk Schuster, the head coach there. But Darmstadt are in the market for a manager.
Tough old gig there.
Yeah, and I wonder if he'd go back and try and save them, having kept them in the, you know, got them promoted, kept them up last season.
Absolutely.
And whether he'd do that.
So midweek games, this is the week they call the English week, don't they? Because they have...
Yep.
They don't often have midweek matches, but they do. You're off to Dortmund, lucky boy, and 2-2 away at Hoffenheim, and on Tuesday night, hosting Augsburg, who, as we've just talked about, don't have a coach at the moment.
Dortmund, I mean, they obviously still have some catching up to do. They have dropped points. Hoffenheim and Cologne have taken points off them of late, but they've been two of the surprise packages in terms of teams riding high in the table. I think, you know, it hasn't been a great first half of the season for Dortmund. They've tried to adapt after losing big name players. They've had the longest injury list, I think, of any team in Europe this season. And some of the young players are still trying to get settled, but some of them have settled very quickly. So I'm really looking forward to that. A couple of Glühweins before, Chris.
Just a couple.
Just a couple.
They're there or thereabouts. And in other years, they might be further off that. Their top four had, I don't know, Leverkusen or Gladbach been a bit more consistent. They're just a point behind Hertha. But these late goals, including in the Champions League, last week at Cologne as well, if you're a positive person, you think, well, doesn't that show the unity and the spirit? And if you're a negative person, you say, well, at some stage, they're going to lose a game which they really shouldn't have lost.
And I suppose as well, they've got a young team who probably are fit and can play, you know, into the late stages of games. I mean, at the weekend, for example, in the draw with Hoffenheim, they started with Christian Pulisic on the wing, played with a back three, something they have been dabbling with this season. They certainly did it in the home win against Bayern. You know, they've got the likes of Weigl, who's still young, Dembele, still young, and when they look to the bench, they can bring on players like Mikel Moreno, Spanish youth international, and Emre Mor, the senior Turkey international now. So I think that's probably part of the reason down to it. It's a big transition year for Dortmund, but given how sort of below par Bayern have been, you know, I wonder if Bayern will, if Dortmund will retrospectively look back and go, God, that was a good year that we could have won it. We really could have pushed them.
Yeah.
But when you sell Hummels, and as I mean, we've been through this a million times on the show, it was always going to be difficult for them. Marco Reus sent off as well, by the way, at the weekend in the first half. Aubameyang bailing them out with an early second half goal to make it 2-2.
Poor bloke. He's just sat on the sidelines for 7 months. And now he's going to miss the final game. So Wednesday night, you talked about Bayern. They haven't been great. They're top on goal difference, and they host Leipzig, the team who are second. That's an absolute corker. Final game before, well, a month off in the Bundesliga, and one of those two is going to be top of the tree after that match at the Allianz.
Yeah, absolutely perfect fixture before the winter break. It won't quite be the halfway point in Germany because they've kicked one fixture over, I presume because of the Euros, but I'm not sure. But after 16 games, I mean, Leipzig have a chance to be... They have to win to go top of the table going into the winter break. But Bayern haven't been convincing. I saw a lot of their win against Darmstadt at the weekend. They needed Douglas Costa to score one of the goals of the season.
That was brilliant.
Cutting inside and sort of hitting that sort of knuckleball shot from about 30 yards in off... I think it clipped the underside of the bar on its way in. Just sensational. But I suppose when you're not playing great, you need that individual quality. But we have a title race. I mean, Leipzig have really hung in there. Hoffenheim, Hertha, they're 9 points off Bayern and Leipzig at the moment.
I know, it felt like a big win for Leipzig, given they lost the week before. And, you know, if you lose two in a row inside the camp, probably panic doesn't sit in. But, you know, you get all that talk, oh, the bubbles burst, etc. But, you know, you said it there. Whatever happens in the title race, 9 points ahead of third and fourth. You know, Leipzig will have to implode something not to get Champions League football now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's possible, but they're talking about them signing more good players in January because they have money to spend. We'll wait and see. I'm really looking forward. I think that game's on BT Sport for people in England, and it'll be Fox Sports in America. I would certainly tune into that on Wednesday because that's going to be a belter.
Yeah, it is. And given that Bayern conceded only 9 and Leipzig only 12, I just wonder whether it might be tighter than some people might expect.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's very well the case. Leipzig have been... Ralf Hasenhüttl was such a good defensive coach. I think that's part of the reason that they've been able to shut out so many teams. It might be a first. I mean, if people haven't seen Leipzig this season, definitely watch, because get a look at the guy, Naby Keita, in centre midfield, Emil Forsberg, who's been the playmaker, I think, of the season so far in Germany. And look how well organised they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to pick out one other game, I think, because we sort of mentioned it. Gladbach host Wolfsburg, which are two sides who are, well, only just above the bottom three. If you believe reports on Monday as we're recording this, it looks like Huddersfield Town might be losing their manager and Jurgen Klopp's best mate to Wolfsburg, because it looks like Herr Wagner might take over, which is a interesting move for him, moving to a top flight Bundesliga team, Rob, but he has Huddersfield in the playoff places. Would you be surprised, given how well he's done, he was always going to be linked and approached? Do you think Wolfsburg is the correct place to go right now, given what we've said about how they're going to sell their big stars and look towards the youth team?
Well, he probably could organise that team a lot better than they have been. I mean, the talk is that Valerian Ismail will lose his job in the winter break, even though he's been there for, you know, 7 or 8 games, not a very long time at all. And they don't look organised. I mean, I commentated on their loss to Hertha recently, and they were all over the place. They were nervous. They were winning the game 2-1. They sat back like an away side and just invited Hertha to go on and get all 3 points. I think Huddersfield, at the time of recording, have come out and said, we've had no official approach from Wolfsburg and for the services of Wagner, but there's no question for him. I mean, that's, you know, it's a big job. It'll be a well-paying job, despite the fact that Wolfsburg are tightening their purse strings, given the emissions scandal repercussions from Volkswagen down to Wolfsburg. But we'll wait and see. I mean, there's loads of managers at risk at the moment. Schubert, as you mentioned, at Gladbach. And then Roger Schmidt, I mean, Leverkusen lost 2-1 to Ingolstadt at the weekend. I mean, it'll probably be worrying because he's 7 points off the Champions League spots and 16 points off Bayern Leipzig.
Yeah.
They were supposed to put pressure on them for the title this year. And the fans, that was a home loss to Ingolstadt. The fans were sort of angry and whistling at half time.
Yeah.
Okay, Chris, there's a couple of other things I want to ask you about because we've had lots of tweets in. Oh, more of your highlights of the weekend have come in. Mr. Walker Porter, we heard about from Adam Summerton about the wonderful showing from Mertens of the weekend with his 4 goals. I actually misread this tweet. He says, who needs Higuain? Who needs milk? But obviously says, who needs Milik? That's me just reading it wrong.
We all need milk because we all drink tea and eat cereal.
We all need milk. So thank you very much to everyone for sending in your highlights of the week. Chris, let's talk about Ajax PSV. Big game in the Netherlands at the weekend.
Yeah, massive game. And ultimately, an excellent weekend for Feyenoord. Because it finished 1-1 in Amsterdam. Davy Klaassen put Ajax 1-0 up. CM de Jong with the equaliser with 10 minutes to go. And it means that the Feyenoords are 5 clear of Ajax and 8 clear of PSV. They beat Vitesse at the weekend. And, you know, you think of Feyenoord as this big Dutch powerhouse, don't you? But as we've mentioned on the show, last title, not in this millennium, 1999. So Gio van Bronckhorst would be creating a bit of history if they can go on. It's still early days, but 1-1 in that game, which is great news for the team from Rotterdam, who couldn't even finish ahead of Fenerbahce or United in the Europa League either. So good first half of the season, but in Europe, again, another Dutch team, despite doing well domestically, not able to transfer that.
Which is,
I think we spoke to Richard Connolly on the show a couple of weeks ago. It's a big problem, particularly with coefficients.
Yeah, it is, in terms of getting those good places in the Champions League. By the way, if you can hear drilling, someone all day has been drilling into this building. It's driving me mad.
Into the building?
Can you hear that?
No, I can't. Can you hear any? Because we're doing this over Skype, my girlfriend is currently cleaning the flat. So I've told her not to put the Hoover on, and she's managed to not do that just yet.
Okay, so we've both got people trying to ruin the show.
Exactly.
But we're coping. We're coping, Chris.
We're professionals, mate.
There's one final thing I wanted to talk about on this show. And by the way, we're going to do a Team of the Season So Far podcast, which is going to be out just after Christmas, because lots of the leagues go on their winter break. But Chris, we feel it's important to touch upon the Ukrainian Premier League, because it's something we've not talked about much this season. We talked a lot about the Russian Premier League.
Yep.
But heading into the winter break, there was a notable result 7 days ago. Do you want to tell us about this one?
It was one of the most baffling, brilliant games of the season. It's the sort of game that you hope as they go into the winter break, the top two great rivals meet, and 7 goals, 2 own goals, and 2 sendings off. And Shakhtar ended up winning it 4-3 in Kiev. Yevhen Kachiridi with the 2 own goals. Dinamo had 2 players sent off, and it all means that Shakhtar look like they have the title wrapped up. They lost Michail Lucescu to Zenit, didn't they, in the summer? But they're 13 points clear going into the winter break.
13 points?
13 points, which is would take a spectacular upset. And they won all 6 of their Europa League games. And you just wonder, I think there's some, along with Zenit actually, some big Eastern European teams in that Europa League who will really fancy their chances of winning the competition.
Okay, Chris, great to have you on the show as always. And Merry Christmas to everyone.
Yes, Merry
Christmas.
Do you
hate that as if you don't need that from your podcast, do you?
Christmas. Well, you said it. I haven't bought a single present.
Have you really not bought anything?
No, I'm going to go on Amazon this evening. Oh. Desperately hope that I haven't missed the last thing. You know, it happens every year. And you're like, oh, God.
Oh, Christmas happens every year. Christmas,
it does happen every year. 25th of December.
Okay, everyone, thank you very much for all the listeners this year. And if you want to tweet us your team of the season so far as well, let us know. Season so far, not of 2016, but the season so far, it's at FIE Podcast.
And a coach and a club, remember that.
Oh, we're doing coach and club. Okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're doing all that. Okay, so we'll be back soon. Thank you very much. Tweet us at FIE Podcast. Bye, Chris.
Bye, Rob.
This is Football in Europe.
Football in Europe is sponsored by BetOnBrazil.com. It's the betting site for all sports punters with great odds, markets and offers.
Listeners to this podcast can now get up to £60 deposit match when you use the promo code FIE60. Just visit betonbrazil.com and enter promo code FIE60 when you deposit, and we'll match your deposit up to £60 Also look out for our daily happy hour offers between 5pm and 6pm.
Sign up now at betonbrazil.com. Betonbrazil.com is for over 18s only. Betting should be fun, so please gamble responsibly.